This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz. This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana, and tonight we have the incoming chair, Peter Newell, with us. And I actually feel like it's an early Christmas because we're going to unwrap you just like a present, Peter, and find out what's inside and what's in store for us at NZB for the future. So I'd like to say welcome and thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Mariana. Thanks, Baron. Pleased to be here.
You're pretty well known around New Zealand Bridge. You've been around for a long time. I guess there'll be some of our listeners maybe not been playing so long that don't even know who Peter Newell is. So how long have you been playing and how did you start?
Fair enough. Well, I came from sort of a very much a card playing and game playing family, I suppose. That was the first thing. So I was playing cards lots for my family, and particularly my father. We played a lot of sort of two-person games, and he taught me two-handed bridge. He called it option. So two-handed bridge is effectively that you have two dummies, playing a dummy, and the other player is playing with a dummy. So what that did is it taught you how to kind of estimate how many tricks you're going to make, because you could see the dummy, work out how many tricks you can make together. And then you got to play the hands, except both dummies were exposed. So effectively, there were two hands face up on the table, and then you could see your hand. You actually knew where all the cards were. So you knew if a finesse was going to work or not going to work or where things were. But although it didn't teach you about betting other than to kind of estimate the number of tricks, it gave you kind of a good sort of basis about how to play and defend and that kind of thing. So that was my first sort of exposure to a bridge-like game. And then I lived overseas and I came to New Zealand at 15. And at school, they were looking for someone to play bridge, some other performers and things like that. And so they kind of asked me to join. I said, well, I sort of know how to play bridge. I didn't know any bidding systems, whatever. My father had briefly told me about Colbertson and you had to have 2.5 honour tricks to open and things like that. But really, I hadn't absorbed any of that. The person who was going to be my partner decided that he wanted me to play precision. So I knew nothing about precision at all. But I mean, he gave me a book and he didn't know that much about it anyway. And we used to play at lunchtime. And, you know, it's funny that those people that I started playing with, well, a couple of them, you know, are still playing bridge, in actual fact. One of them is fairly well-known in Auckland, Mark Hangartner, who's obviously a prominent administrator as well as player. And then there was another, someone called Casey Plunkett, who played on and off for years. I played with him a bit last year, but he's gone overseas now. So played at school. And then when I went to university, first year university, I joined a bridge club with a couple of other people who I was already sort of playing with. And we were really lucky because we had probably about 6 or 7 or even more like students all together. So we had a lot of partners to play with and we played a lot. We played all night. Yeah, we really got into it then.
You were playing in the final of the New Zealand teams this year and Mark Ann Gartner was in the team that was against you, I think, wasn't
That's right. In the quarterfinal, I think it was, but
Now, I have a question. You had a nickname back in those days, and I understand that you had long, curly hair. Is that correct?
I did have very long hair, and I was very skinny in my younger days.
And what was your nickname back then?
I can't actually remember.
How do you know this, Mariana? Where have you got this from?
Well, look.
I probably had various nicknames.
We have just come back from Congress, and guess who my roommates were?
The Hangartners, of course.
Ah, okay.
I can't quite remember. Was it Zingy or Ziggy or something along those lines? He said he had beautiful long locks.
Yeah, I did have long hair. Those were the days. Long gone.
Barry, how many years ago are we talking that you learnt then? I know this is going to... some people might be doing the maths here, Peter.
1977 was my year 11 at Wellington College.
We're talking nearly 50 years ago.
Yeah, I joined Wellington Club in 1980. I think that was my first university, and I've been a member ever since. So I'm getting into one of the really old-timers there now. I've been a member 45 years.
Yeah, and look at you now. You had a fantastic Congress, didn't you, personally?
Yeah, it went really well. We often not there for quite a whole, I haven't played 9 or 10 days for quite a long time. So, it was a really good week for us.
Your partnership with Martin Reed, now that's probably one of the most enduring partnerships. How long has that been going for?
I think we started playing in 1990. It's quite a long time.
That's cool.
A few partners before then. We lived in the same city and kept on playing,
We're on that subject. I said I had a tough question for you, and it's about Martin. He's playing this weekend with Jack James at Wellington, and Jack James has won 21 tournaments this year. The question is, do you think he can get Martin over the line on Saturday?
Well, I don't know, because I don't think Martin's won a tournament this year apart from a Congress. I've only won one.
Also, the odds might be stacked against you, Jack. You never know.
You never know. We don't play that many tournaments together, really, this year, apart from the Wellington.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Part of the unwrapping of the present that you are to us is, I understand it's Alan Morris's last board meeting tomorrow, being Tuesday the 9th of December. What's going to happen immediately after that, Peter? Have you got any visions for 26, or is it more longer than that?
Oh, I think there are things definitely in mind for 2026. I think I should just clarify one thing. I'm the chair-elect, and so I have to be confirmed by the new board, which is only one member different, early next year. I mean, I think we've got a number of things kind of in play that we need to kind of finish off and complete. As an example, the website is one example where it didn't work when it went live earlier this year. And so there's quite a bit of work to fix it up and thoroughly test it. We want the new website up and running this year. It'll probably be more like the sort of the second quarter of the year. So that's definitely, you know, one thing to get that sort of going. We've set up this Fair Play Committee to kind of promote sort of higher standards of behaviour and support clubs better. And that's only been going a few months. So getting that bedded down and working is pretty important too. The Incorporated Societies Act, that's a big deal for clubs in terms of having to have a new constitution and be re-registered in the Incorporated Societies Act before the 1st of April. Because if they're not, they have to be disestablished. There's been quite a lot of work by Anne Barrow Club on the board to try and help clubs with the process. Most clubs have done well and have done it or nearly done it. There are a few sort of that are still, we're not quite sure where they're at. That's pretty important. Otherwise, they will, on the 1st of April, they'll have to be dissolved, effectively, according to the law. So that's a pretty big thing.
Did clubs have to get back to the board to confirm what their current status is in that progressions? Barry and I are both at Hamilton Club, and we've actually received our new incorporation certificate and everything. Would be great if clubs actually went back to the board and said, hey, we're all done and dusted. You don't need to worry about us.
Yeah, they are doing that. So Anne Barrow Club has a list. I've seen the list of that. And like she's got the last 20 or 30 that are kind of like nearly there or you know, say they're going to be there. But there are a few that are like question marks still.
Right.
They're a small number. You know, and they still have got 3 months to go. But there's quite a lot of work in many cases. So, you know, it's not that easy, particularly for smaller clubs who don't have that to the way of resources and stuff like that.
That's right.
Yeah, quite a big deal for them. Yeah, other things, international, obviously, they've got a national coach. We've just sort of appointed in Tom Jacobs. That's going to be, you know, a little bit different, and he's only just started up in his role. So those are kind of things that are immediate for next year, and generally the kind of the theme in the last year and also going forward is we want to sort of continue to grow and retain membership. Membership did a bit of a drop, you know, after COVID, and it's slowly sort of picked up again. We want to continue to do that, to grow membership and retaining people. So we did quite a bit of work last year around trying to think about how to help support clubs with that and some of the key things about actually what are the key things to retain players effectively, because we're quite good at seemingly getting people into leasons and many clubs struggle with actually keeping people after leasons, and so that's kind of a really important transition because it's quite a big jump from leasons to playing at the club. So we've done some work around that, and I think it's an area that we continue need to see more work on.
For sure, it certainly is retaining, and it has always been the hardest part.
That's right. And I think a higher standard of behaviour is actually something that would kind of help a little bit. It's not that a behaviour is bad, and, you know, 99% of it is good. Just the 1 or 2% can really put players off effectively if they got a bad experience. And part of that can be just, it's quite a jump from learning lessons to actually jumping into the playing a club session and being scored and those things like that. And, you know, having directors with rules and but scary for me.
It's a bit hard to believe, isn't it? When you talk to Jenny runs sort of a novice group on Friday mornings, that first time when they walk into a room, well, maybe not full, you know, even if it's only five or six table, is absolutely terrifying for some people.
That's right.
And it wouldn't take much to put them off forever.
Exactly. And the Teaching and Learning Committee did a huge amount of work, you know, last year in terms of actually improving the teaching and learning material.
Yeah.
There have been new booklets this year and far better learning materials because I don't think they'd been revised for about 10 years or something like that. I don't know how long, but I remember sort of looking at the old ones. I've done a little bit of teaching and kind of think, oh, God, I don't like that. I don't want to teach that. It wasn't the way I wanted to communicate it. My sort of teaching was sort of fairly casual with people. It was a bit different. And I certainly think that orientating towards getting people to play earlier and not putting too much sort of theory into them early is a good thing.
I was quite surprised because I actually thought from discussions was that our lessons, how many we did, was actually too many. But this new rollout is actually a little bit longer. And I thought, the content in it has changed a little bit. So instead of 2 weeks of mini bridge, we're now looking at four. And so it stretches it out. I think any change is good.
That's right. It's a hard one, isn't it? Because if you make the lessons too long, you kind of like risk people losing interest or missing a couple and then feeling they can't catch up. So our club at Wellington, we kind of try to use flexibility. Well, it's not like the end of the world. If you miss one lesson, you can catch up. Don't feel you kind of have to lose your lessons by that. And if you don't give people enough help to start off with, well, jumping into the pool or playing in a club session is quite a big jump. So those kinds of safe landing places, it sounds like, Barry, you're talking about, you know, what Jenny was doing, your local club, I think are kind of really important to kind of give them a bit of a transition before they play against people who've been playing really well.
Well, with that particular group, it's got bigger and bigger, and I don't think some of them ever want to transition. They're a group that bring in biscuits for morning tea, and they don't play that many boards, and some of them are perhaps never going to go anywhere else. They still play regularly at the club, so it's a good thing.
People play for different reasons, isn't it? Like social is a pretty big part for many people, and then some people, the competition and trying to get better is a big part of it. Different people got different motivations, really.
I've quite often quoted this stat. I think it was Jerry Palmer who told me he was teaching for a while, and he said, it doesn't matter what you teach them, you'd be lucky if they remember 30% of what you told them. And I talked to him years later, and he said, I think 30% was a bit of an overbid. I think it might be less. That's sort of humorous, but it's true. And yeah, maybe we shouldn't be too fussy about trying to teach them everything.
Well, I think that's right. I think about when I go to some sort of learning something new, my attention span's about 7.5 minutes, like a bridge hand, really. It's like after that, it's like, I'm ready for a little break now. And I lose what's going on and you have to refocus again. So, you know, I think a lot of people, most people, not everyone, you learn more by doing or being assisted doing rather than by listening and things like that. You've got to sort of practically do something or you forget. There's so many times I've been on training courses that said, well, this is how you do this. And then I won't do it for 3 months and I've forgotten completely how to do it. It's like, okay, right. Well, I have to look it up again.
Right. So what we're really saying here is you want to get cards in their hands in the first 7.5 minutes, probably.
You do, pretty much, yeah. And I taught some people to work and that's pretty much what I did. I dealt them a hand. And so like, I went through about 5 to 10 minutes of basics about what your points were and suits and things like that. And then, right, we dealt some cards and we started playing, you know, and we just talked about everything as that you went along. You can't do that with a big group. I think getting people with cards in the hand, because it's more fun than trying to learn you need exactly this number of points to bid this and this number of points to bid that. That's quite hard to all remember at the same time.
That's right.
I guess that's why mini bridges are a good thing, because they actually don't bid.
Yeah. The bidding to start off with isn't very exciting for people. To play the cards, that's more fun. Later on, people get more interested in bidding, and obviously that's one of the things that makes bridge sort of a challenging game, the fact that, you know, you and your partner have got to exchange information. It's like a language to sort of try and work out what to do.
Well, that's exactly what it is. It is a language, really, that you're learning.
Join us next week as we continue our chat with chair-elect Peter Newell.
Hear ye, hear ye. The court's in session. The court's in session now. Here come the judge.
It's almost Christmas, Judge Julie. Things are starting to get hectic. You're going to have a quiet one this year, are you?
Yep, nice and quiet. Auckland's wonderful. Everyone goes away. So no traffic. Seriously, it's lovely staying in Auckland and being at home. So I've got a couple of grandchildren up here just to keep us on our toes.
Oh, nice.
And my family in Wellington, they're going up to the in-laws for their Christmas.
Cool.
So it will all work out. Yeah, looking forward to a lovely, warm, by the look of it, Christmas.
Oh, it's going to be stifling, isn't it? Boy, yesterday it was pretty hot.
Oh, incredible, yeah.
Barry's not with us this week, listeners, but we do have his question. And his question was, it happened to him at, he was directing last week, and South was dealer. Before South could do anything, West went along and made a bid and came down to a pass out of rotation.
I thought you said East pass.
Oh, sorry.
It's important. Big difference.
No, I'm pretty sure it's West pass. Okay. South dealer, West pass.
Okay, all right. We'll cover both because there is a big, big difference and it probably helps to know exactly what that is. When West passes and South dealer, first of all, North can accept the pass.
Okay.
If North doesn't accept it, then it goes back to South. Now, if South makes a call, then the offender has to pass it the next turn. It is that simple. And if South doesn't make a call and West passes, everything is normal.
Right.
And the reason that this is so simple is because West gets to make their call before their partner does.
Right.
So when they've made their call out of rotation, they're still going to make any call before their partner gets to bid. So the amount of unauthorized information here is going to be minimal.
Yeah.
And although there
Okay.
may be some that we'll deal with, in general, it doesn't matter. If you're like me and you struggle with clockwise and anti-clockwise and left and right, and which side of
Yeah.
the table you're on and all the rest of it, I actually work it out by the amount of damage the unauthorized information causes to read the right rule, which seems a bit backward, but it works really well for me. Okay,
Okay.
so if East passed out of turn and South
Yes.
was the dealer, again, this time South can accept the call. If they do, everything continues normally. If they don't, then the auction reverts to South. Now, you'll note that West here will get to make a bid before East does, and they know
Yes.
that East has not got an opening hand.
Right, I see.
Okay, so what happens here is more complex. If the offender hasn't previously called, so this is the opening bids, etc., then the offender's partner may make any legal call. West can make any call that they like they normally would, but Law 16C, which is unauthorized information, will apply because they're not allowed to know that their partner has got less than an opening hand. West can make any call that they like, but when it gets around to East, they have to make comparable call, right?
Sold on.
So if West passes out of turn, it's South's turn. It's nice and easy. If it's not accepted, South makes their bid and West passes at their turn. And basically, that sorts it all out because everyone knows they've got a passed hand and everything just proceeds normally. There is no issue there at all.
Okay.
If East makes the ball out of rotation, then we know that their partner is going to, if it's not accepted, their partner is going to be making a call before it gets round to them. So now we do have unauthorized information that causes us some issues. So West can make any call that they like, but they're not allowed to use that unauthorized information. They've got to pretend that their partner hasn't done anything wrong, that they didn't see or hear anything. Always a difficult thing, but that's okay because as a director, we can sort that out at the end of the hand if we have to. All right.
Okay, hello. Pleased
Easy
that you
on.
meet up with us.
So now, if South passes and West bids one heart, for argument's sake, and it goes to North, East has to make a comparable call. So any comparable call by East has to be a bid that limits their hand to less than an opening hand. All right.
All
Two
right.
hearts, one no trump, two hearts, all perfect. If you play Bergen or stuff like that, the three clubs, three diamond bids showing heart support in the range of the hand, perfect. If you play weak jump shifts, then presumably that's sort of in the same box as a passed hand. Although we have some information that isn't exactly in there, but there's enough of it in there that we might let the auction proceed and adjust it at the end if we
Oh,
have
right.
to. Okay, so there is the problem with if West opens one heart and it goes past, can East bid three hearts? Well, possibly they can because 10 to 12. It might be a call that you allow them to make based on the fact that it's sort of there.
Okay.
That's sort of a difficult one because it could be where you don't allow it because of that 10 to 12 range. Then again, if it's 10 to a bad 12, maybe they wouldn't have opened it and it fits into the passed hand range.
Hey, what about if they bid four hearts?
Well, that's fine because that's less than an opening hand,
Is
right?
it?
Unless you're a beginner, and in which case you probably have no idea. Well, not to be rude about beginners, I mean, it's still not quite there. Four hearts is generally like five card support and less than an opening hand. So this is where, if you are a non-playing director, life is easy. You take East away from the table. You look at their hand. You say to them what their choices are. They can make a call that's not comparable, like a four hearts showed an opening hand. Then their partner is not allowed to bid again. If the call's not comparable, their partner has to pass.
A lot of
Okay.
directors don't like that word comparable.
I know they don't. If you're a playing director, then in some ways you're really stuck. You can explain it. The plus side, to be clear, for a playing director is that you can still allow some of the options to continue, and then you can go back afterwards and adjust the board if necessary.
Yeah.
I can tell you one thing. I'm pleased that they accepted the pass, because I probably was going to get that wrong. When I went and looked at the book, it sort of looked to me like I didn't get the comparable part, that if they make a comparable bid.
The partner or left-hand opponent's turn to call if they haven't previously called. If they previously called, then it's going to end up being a change of call, pretty much. When the call is not comparable, a vendor's partner must pass when next it's their turn to call. So if it went past one heart, past one spade by East, West would have to pass for one round.
Yep. I get you. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Now, if they end up in a contract they couldn't have otherwise ended up in because of all the whole situation, you are going to adjust that board.
Right.
You're not allowed to benefit from if you bid one spade and partner has to pass by being able to play on one spade and making one spade. So there are things there about the unauthorised information and the damage that is done that may be investigated at the end of the hand. So playing directors, you have a problem with comparable calls. New Zealand's apparently one of the few countries where we have playing directors. So the laws are geared tournament and other things anyway, but they're really not geared for the situation we have small clubs, small numbers of tables and playing directors. But on the plus side, if it is really difficult, you can let the auction continue. You can go back at the end of the hand and adjust it from what it is to something else. Or you can be really clear about what their options are and hope that they get it right and then go back and look at it at the end of the hand. So there are a few things you can do that aren't easily covered by the law book, but because of the situation you're directing in, I mean, you're playing and you might not have played the board, and there are so many problems here about what does or doesn't happen when you're in that situation. So you do the best you can, but remember that always you can go back and look at it and adjust it at the end of the session if you have to.
Sure.
Because it's really important to allow you to be able to play and direct. Okay?
That sounds good. I'll catch you next week.
Okay, thanks, Julie.
See ya. Bye. Whaiakine, we have the last words from our outgoing chairperson, Alan Morris, coming up next. I don't know if you could have Christmas presents in 2 days, Barry. We had Peter Newell last night, and tonight we've got Alan Morris. It's so great to have you on the Bridge Zone, Alan. We were products of your imagination.
Well, I don't know if it was my imagination. You guys have done a good job over a long period of time. You've probably been there as long as I have.
Oh, yeah, actually, it wouldn't be too far off that.
No, it wouldn't be too far off it.
Well, but, in our 8th year, Mariana, and Alan's been going for 9, so we've certainly been around for most of his tenure. Yeah.
And the Bridge Zone has been all over the world, I kid you not. UK, Rome, Germany, where else, Barry?
Buenos Aires, Morocco. Yes, it's been everywhere.
Fantastic.
You look at some of our internationals. You've got Wibley and Brown, who, you know, won in India again. You've got Wibley as part of a team that won the Soloway. It's bloody good. One should be proud, really proud. What I thought I'd finish up with was just sharing some of the things I would have liked to have done somewhat differently or better, and then just highlight what I think have been some of the positive things that we've achieved in the last 3 years. I know I put out a newsletter the other day, but not everybody reads the newsletter. Not everybody listens to the Bridge Zone. They just don't know what they're missing. Clearly, some of the things, the desire to improve our operating system and website, which we wanted to roll out last year, and we hit some road bumps, and it'll be ready for testing in March of next year. We need to upgrade our technology. And that's no different to MBOs all around the world. Recent survey by the WBF of MBOs have all highlighted the need for better technology. They've also highlighted the need for teaching and learning as the primary things. And how do they go about retaining bridge players and growing membership? And to be able to do that, you need the management tools. So technology is part of that issue. So we're pretty keen to do that. I had hoped I would have done this 5 years ago and I didn't. And again, that's linked back into the technology is having a national handicapping system. I think there are pretty positive things that people, in addition to the master points, it creates opportunity for players on a handicap basis. It doesn't remove how we award master points and how we reward excellence. The third thing would have been the rollout of our new teaching program, where we've hopefully have contemporised that. And the idea was that would be available in 25 and it's now going to be available for lessons in 26. Goes to the printers about the 16th of this month, next week, and that will then be available to clubs. We discussed that this morning. One of the positive things to come out of this morning was the booklets that we normally send to the clubs. We're going to make those available at no cost to the clubs. So we'll inquire how many booklets clubs want to support their learner program, we'll make available for them. So that's a positive thing.
Cool.
We set some lofty goals about having more people playing the game. Yes, membership's gone up this year. It's tracking down, which is pretty typical at this time of the year. People decide, are they going to renew their membership from their learning? They had a pathway. So we're expecting a drop. I would have liked the numbers to have been a lot higher, but maybe I was a little too ambitious. I'd have been really keen to see us being recognised as a sport. All attempts to engage with government and Sport New Zealand have failed. It's one of the initiatives that's on Peter's desk as we move into 26 in terms of how can we engage with Sport New Zealand and try and change the dial and being recognised as a sport, like many of our counterparts around the world are. And that just opens up doors that we don't presently have. Come back to that point. That touches on international a little bit. And lastly, we've done a lot around building the toolkit and rolling the toolkit out, but we're still behind in updating the manual or the parts of the manual that will be in the manual, which is really around the laws and master points and stuff like that. I would have liked that to have happened before now, but that'll be 2026. So that's, if you can call those negative, they're on the negative side. On the positive side, I think we've done a huge amount collectively, and you guys are party to that, is reuniting our community. When I started, it was not a happy place. It was pretty divided, and I think we've achieved a lot to bring the community back together and feel that they are listened to and heard, and that we communicate and we are open and we are transparent, and I think that's a positive step.
Thanks for hanging in with us at the Bridge Zone as we head towards the close of 2025.
Bye for now.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring Bridge from beginner to international nationwide. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.